My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. So, y'all, I am so nervous about today's podcast episode. And I think I'm nervous because today's topic is such a big issue. It is an important issue. It's one that hundreds of thousands of women, if not millions of women, experience every day. And they don't really know what to do about it when they've done everything that they can to try to break the cycle. And it's just not getting better. And focusing on themselves is not making it better. And I pray before I started this episode, I just really pray that it hits the ears of every single person who needs it. And even if it's something that you have to listen to over and over again at different times, I pray that every time it resonates in the way that you need it, in the way that your heart needs it. And if you're someone who has gone through this experience and you're looking back at it, I pray that you're able to hear this with love and with compassion, and love and compassion that you can give yourself. So I'm going to talk more about inspiration for this episode after the jump, but let me just tell you what it is. We're talking about why we stay in relationships when we feel tired, when we feel heavy laden, burdened, as if we are the ones who are carrying all the weight, when we feel unseen by our partners, taken for granted. Why do we still stay? Again, it is so important. It is so common. I think this is going to hit every single woman who may need it. Whether or not she's in a casual dating relationship and the fire has kind of gone and she's trying to rekindle it, whether or not you're in a committed partnership with kids, without kids, depending on how much you've been down this rabbit hole already, you have heard the term married single wife or married single mother, and you feel like a lot of the qualities apply to you, but it's just not hitting in the way that it needs to. And then everything in between. I hope that this episode helps you. I'm going to be talking about the different stages of why we get into these relationships, and so that you know the end point. Because a lot of people will just tell you, this is where you are and this is why, but they don't tell you the next steps to go. And I'm going to tell them all to y'all. And I'm going to tell you, as I'm explaining it to you, I'm going to share why I'm giving you so much information. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a longer episode. But yeah, I can't get too much into it now without getting out of order. So that's what we're talking about today. So again, I'm sending you all so much love, and let's go ahead and jump on in. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Okay. So like I said, the name of today's episode is Why Do We Stay in Relationships Even If We Are Tired? A little bit about what that means or what I mean by that as well in the intro. There is a trend going on currently on social media where women will come to their platforms, especially if it's TikTok, and share a recent experience with a partner that has made them feel very hurt. It's made them feel very hurt, forgotten, neglected, taken for granted. And they'll pose it as, this is the thing that happened. Can you tell me if I'm tripping? Can you tell me if I'm the one who has the wrong set of expectations, right? Or the other alternative is they will share what can be a very embarrassing situation to them, but they're saying it in a comical way because they don't really have the attachment. These things may have been happening in such a way, maybe for such a long period of time, that to them, it seems like this cute, quirky, oh, especially if it's a straight couple. I've yet to see one with a queer couple. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but on my feed, this is what my algorithm shows me. So they'll say it in a way that it's like, you know, men will be men, and can you believe this is what it's like to be married or to be in a committed partnership kind of thing, expecting, in both of these incidents, they're both expecting people to either laugh at them or affirm them. with the first example, for them to say, yeah, girl, that's so annoying. You know, no, you're not tripping. You totally have a right to feel that way. But for that to be the end of the commentary, they get very, very surprised and hurt and defensive when people are like, girl, not only is that not okay, but you shouldn't be in a relationship like that, because she wasn't asking you that. She was just asking, am I tripping for feeling this way? She wasn't asking you for advice to leave. The second example, when someone is saying it in a way that's like comical, can you believe this? You know, men are just so crazy, da, 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 is expecting people to just laugh. You know, the same things that we're taught as little girls. If a boy likes you and he starts to hit you and to poke fun at you and to embarrass you, that just means that he likes you. So we learn very early that this type of non-loving behavior is just how men are. It's how we're indoctrinated. And if we weren't specifically told that or had those experiences, we had all kinds of TV shows, music, movies to show that this is kind of it. Like, it's also presented as this kind of comical evolution. You know, boys come in, they're hapless. They just don't know any better. You know, they're rough and tumbling, and their way of figuring out how to become a lover boy, Romeo, the man of your dreams, is they all have to. They have to go through this stage of treating you like shit, treating other women like shit, and just being an asshole. Boys will be boys until one day they just figure it out and grow out of it. We learn very early on to just accept poor behavior. So when people come into the comments and they're not laughing, they're saying, wait, this isn't a boys be boys thing. And if it is a boys be boys thing, you shouldn't be on the receiving end of this. You don't have to take this kind of thing. Again, I wasn't asking you that. Now it's time for me to defend my partner and also myself. Meanwhile, the title of this episode, Why You Stay in Relationships Even When You Feel Tired, is because all of these women, they stay. You may be the woman who has stayed. And if you haven't clicked off this episode, I want you to know I have been the woman who has stayed. And there's nothing in this episode that's going to tell you it's time for you to go. What I just really want to illuminate for you or for your girlfriend or your auntie or your mama or anybody else who you might be connected to who's going through this, your best friend, I just want to tell you what the stages of this are so that you can identify for where you are right now. And then make the best next step for where you need to be for yourself that feels empowering to you. And again, this is not going to be a gotcha. This is not going to be like, okay, she told me this is safe. And at the end, I'm going to be feeling like shit because I'm going to stay. Here's what I know. I know that for so many women, again, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of women who are in this place, the last thing that you want to do is to leave your partner. So when people tell you to do that, it makes everything in you digging your heels, because they're not only insulting the partner, they're insulting you. And they're trying to take away this person that you deeply love, this relationship that's deeply important to you. And they're trivializing it to just this moment that you're sharing. And you know, and you feel in your heart that this relationship, again, you know, I don't want to say you feel in your heart because that sounds dismissive. But you know that this relationship is so much more. It's been based in so much more. There's so much more history here. There's so much more hope and optimism that people are not getting in this little snippet of time that they either saw or heard. And so that makes you want to explain it off or to defend it, because you're like, we're bigger than this. This person is bigger than this. This relationship means more. God told us to be here. Like, I know that this is a relationship I'm supposed to be in. I'm not going to work at all to try to convince you to get out. Like all the things that I do here, I just want to give you tools and insight and awareness so that you can place yourself where you are in the cycle. So just like we talk about, the only other cycle that I know that's very well known to let you know where I'm about to go is the stages of grief. I know that's a very negative connotation, but everyone knows about the stages of grief, the denial, the bargaining, the sadness, the anger, the acceptance. That's not in the right order, but it's commonly known, right? Or heard of, right? So in the same way, I'm going to tell you what the evolution of this looks like. The first step of this cycle is entering into the relationship. You enter the relationship and, you know, you have your positive moments. You have your moments of when you're starting to date and starting to get together and get to know each other. And it feels really easy. It feels really easy because either you have similar values, maybe you grew up together, maybe you have the same faith. But there's just something about this connection with this person that seems pretty comfortable. It doesn't start off with fireworks and like, this is the relationship that has swept me off my feet. but you do fall in deep, serious love and commitment. The other person, not always, but for the most part, is also comfortable to be in partnership with you. Sometimes a partnership looks like someone who is open and willing to get married. And sometimes it looks like someone who just wants to have a long-term partnership without like marriage on the horizon or maybe way down the road. Either way, there's just something about this that feels familiar to you. And that's why it feels so easy. When I talk about the fireworks, I'm not saying you're not sexually or intimately attracted to this person. What I'm saying is like the grand gestures that people like talk about, or maybe you might even fantasize about before, you know, hotel rooms filled with 12 dozen roses, or this person going and getting your car clean and detailed without you knowing it, and then also having a steak meal for you, you know, whatever stories that have floated your boat, researching what your favorite pastel and art pencils are, if you're an artist, and having it on your bed with a bow, you know, leaving you long, detailed love notes. And I'm trying to go through all of the different love languages, right? These big sweeping gestures don't happen, but that's okay. Like, cause there are still sweet moments. And also, like I said, you feel so comfortable with them. You can talk with them. They can talk with you. There's mutual openness. These sweeping gestures may not happen because it might not be part of the person's personality. There might not be the finances that are available. So you are able to overlook not having these big grand gestures and moments because you understand and you know that love doesn't have to mean or show all that. There are different forms of love, and also the ways that you feel comfortable with this person. That's enough. So there's that. And then, so you enter into the relationship, you have these moments, and then the next stage is the relieved commitment. So this is where there is real commitment in the relationship. So like I said, for some of us, it looks like engagement, ring, marriage. And for others of us, either you both agree that you don't want to get married, or this other person says that they are not ready to do it. But either way, there's no marriage complete on the horizon. This is where you might be a girlfriend for several years. And this can be consensual. This could also be something that you say and believe and know that you want. But for some of you, it's not. And so you're just kind of waiting until the person is ready. In this relieved commitment stage, relief is the biggest marker here, right? So in the first stage, the entry into the relationship, this unknown feeling of this feeling comfortable, like it feels familiar. It feels easy for you to be in this type of relationship, right? That's kind of the key emotional indicators there. For this stage, the relief commitment stage, the relief is the feeling, right? You can almost woosa, like we talk about waiting to exhale. There's relief when you get to the stage because you don't have to be out in the streets anymore. You found your person. It gives you kind of like this internal sense of security. You get to have someone to who's always going to be your movie partner. Again, usually this is someone that you have very similar values with. You're having fun building this life with them. For some of us, you get this feeling that you've done something right, especially if this is a faith-based relationship. So, you know, you're honoring God, you did this God's way, everybody in your life approved, or you found signs, miracles, whatever, to validate for you that this was a relationship that you're supposed to be in. And yeah, it feels relieving to be in this place and start to build this life around them. Now, the next stage is going to seem like a jump, but I'm going to have to go back to a couple stages after I introduce this stage to you, okay? And I'm going to tell you why. The next stage in this relationship is stress and burnout, because what I didn't share in the previous ones, because I wanted you to hear the positivity that's there, because I think a lot of times when people talk about these types of relationships, it's so negative focused, which makes you want to push back because they're not validating that there are and were some really great moments in this relationship. So I want you to know and hear that those are absolutely things that have happened, right? But stress and burnout is just the third stage. Because in these relationships, you are usually doing all or most of the emotional and mental labor to keep the relationship going. So you're the one who is spearheading the emotional conversations. You're thinking five steps ahead about what needs to happen. You have also been doing a lot of physical labor usually to compensate for what's needed to happen in this relationship. So whether or not it's you doing a lot of the physical chores that happened, domestic labor that's going on. This could even be things outside the house. You know, you're in charge of car maintenance. You're in charge of making sure there's gas. You're in charge of reminding your partner of the things that he has to do. I'm going to be using he for the rest of this just because I can't remember if I said in the intro, I might have said in a part that I cut out because I've for the intro a few times. I don't really see this as much in queer relationships. Oh yeah, I did say this. So I'm going to be using he for the rest of today's episode. So you have been carrying all this. The reason why stress and burnout comes here, though, and the way that this is connected to the previous relationship, the previous cycles, is that this has always kind of been the marker of your relationship. You've always done a little bit more. You may have been in a relationship where part of what made this really good is that this person welcomes and appreciated, seemed like they appreciated your type A independence energy, right? And they were the perfect conduit for this, the perfect match, because they are passive. They may have strong opinions about certain things, and they may say, well, no, this is what I want and this is what I need, which is why you may have missed it in some places, because they can be so opinionated and stubborn and strong and say what they want and declare what they want. But when it comes to the execution of that happening, you are the one who has been the executor. If this person has said that they want to execute something, you are the one who's looked up the resources, the tools, you set the appointments so that this person can execute. So actually, they could not have executed it without you. This might, you or them might have some resistance in hearing me say that, because that makes it seem as if I'm saying that this person is not capable. But the reason why you invested and supported them is because you know that they're capable, and you know, you believe that they could do it on their own. That might seem incomplete, but the only thing in these situations, the only thing that you're hoping for is gratitude. You're doing this when you help your partner, you're doing this, and when you help the household and when you do all these things, it is because you're doing it out of the abundance of your heart. You're doing it out of love. You're doing it because you enjoy it. You enjoy being the helper. You enjoy being a helpmate. You enjoy being a partner. All you ask for is to be seen and for the person to be grateful for it. You want every once in a while for the person to say, you know, I could never do this without you. And you are the best thing that's ever happened to me. I wouldn't be the man that I was without you, right? That's what your soul is craving. And then also, you're hoping that, like, over time, that they will also see the heaviness of your efforts and want to chip in. They see you having more and more days where before you used to have all this boundless energy, and now you're getting more tired. Now you're getting overwhelmed. You might tell them, I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I really need help. And you might even directly ask them for help. But either way, several things start to happen at this stage. They don't tell you these verbal affirmations. In fact, they might even still kind of be critical or say more of what they need and what they want. They might even say, man, I can't get this thing going because I just feel so sick, or I feel so depressed, or I, you know, people aren't giving me a chance. And meanwhile, you're ready and able to help them bridge whatever gap it is that they need to be helped in. But either they don't take the help, or again, they have this narrative that things are just so wrong for them. And this is a moment that they could turn to you and be grateful and say, thank you. This is a hard time, but thank you so much for everything you've done for me. But that doesn't happen. They're kind of more caught in their own cycle. You know, what could have happened to them, what should have happened to them, the traumas that happened to them, and all that type of thing. So that doesn't happen. You're asking for help, or you're very obviously showing that you're stressed or whatever, and your partner does not pick up the slack for this. They may start to do a task for you, but then kind of half do it, which stresses you out more, because now you have to go back and clean it up. Now you have to consistently teach them how to do the thing that you're asking them to do. So it's just better that you just do it yourself. It's better that you don't even ask for help. So now you used to be able to do all those things before and just kind of brush it off. But now at this stage, it's starting to get very heavy. Now, this is connected to the previous stages, because one of the reasons why this relationship felt so familiar and so comfortable is chances are you have been in relationships, including childhood relationships, where very few people took care of you. You are probably very likely to be someone who had to either take care of yourself and look at taking care of yourself more than anything, and or taking care of other people too. So to be in a relationship where you are with someone who doesn't, like, is physically present, but doesn't really pour as much into you, you don't have words for that. And it's also not something that's ever going to be in your radar. But it feels very familiar, because you have found an adult representation of being in a relationship where you were the main worker and the main caregiver, and kind of like a body and a tool. And if your childhood was like mine, which I've talked about very often on this podcast, if your childhood was like mine, you got praised for as much as you could become invisible and give all of yourself, you know, give all of yourself mentally, emotionally, and financially, put yourself, put your needs on the side for the greater good, and then come back to it later if there's time and space for it. And so to be in this type of relationship, it's not even on your radar that this could be an issue because it's all you've ever known. And also you don't really have a desire for much, right? So when I talked about these big sweeping gestures and stuff as well at the beginning, these big romantic things, it was very easy. You know, like, of course, there may have been a little bit of regret, a little bit of sadness around it, but there is a part of you that could more easily put that off to the side as a need because it wasn't modeled to you. It wasn't given to you because in your life, real love does not have to be measured. Like, it's not superficial. Those are some words that we may hear. Real love doesn't have to be so superficial. We don't need it all the time. Like in everyday life, you know, sometimes monotony happens. Those are the types of couples and relationship stories that when we hear them, our ears perk up because we're like, oh, that's my story. Great. So it's good to know that I'm in a relationship that's healthy and normal, that there's ups and downs, you know, we'll get through and we'll come out on the other side. And then also the relief commitment to be in a relationship with someone who sees you and allows you to be you, because you may have your own feelings of self-rejection around some of your neuroticism, your perfectionism. It may have been a deal breaker in previous relationships. It may have also been something that kind of made it easier for you to cut other relationships off or not really give them a chance. And so to be in a relationship with someone who allows you to be fully you, be your thinker, planner, caring, helper self. And it seems like to be really open to receiving it. So you get to take care of someone. Not only do I get to be loved and to be in a committed relationship, but I get to take care of someone and I get to build a life with them and I get to have like an active part of that. That's what it looked like. But you didn't realize or you didn't spot or catch that you were going to be the architect, the builder, the engineer, and you were going to have to work 24/7 on this alone. And not only were you going to be the one that was in charge of pulling yourself and your personal weight up the mountain, you also are the one that's in charge of pulling the weight of a 230-pound man and 250-pound children and the dog, and then also the stress of what is happening in their family life. That's the other thing we don't talk about as much, is it's not only the stress of your own household. A lot of times, you're connected to the stress of their extended family. So now you're taking on the health and the impact of and the financial strength of what's going on in their family and their issues. You're carrying the mental and emotional load of hearing what's going on with them and trying to be there for them as well. And also your own extended family, if you're in connection with them and if you're close to them, right? So this is stress and burnout, and you do ask for help and it doesn't happen. The next stage is humiliation and embarrassment. So this could be happening, and a lot of times it is happening at the same time as the stress and a burnout. But this is when you start to clock more incidents of when you're asking for help and it doesn't happen, or if they do something that is obviously humiliating and shameful to you, but you struggle, even though you fight with them, even though you tell them you don't like it or whatever, these incidents happen and it seems like to be little recourse. You might get to a place where they say, oh, I'm sorry that this happened or it won't happen again. But a lot of times you might be emotionally fighting to legitimize to your partner that what you're asking for actually matters. So whether or not you're asking for flowers, whether or not you're asking for a gift on your birthday, whether or not, or Valentine's Day was just passed, right? So many of us did not get a gift for Valentine's Day, or the one that we got was questionable at the most, or it was given to us with a lot of emotional retaliation on the other side of it, right? So a lot of guilting and shame and, you know, whatever, however much it cost them, or here's your gift because you kept asking me for it kind of thing. So they gave you what you wanted, but their energy around it, what they said, soured the whole experience, right? And so again, you can apply this at any time. But we start to have more and more of these incidents, and it's harder and harder for us to discount it or dismiss it and say, well, that's just how he is. That's just how things are. I'll go ahead and advocate for myself and ask for what I want. And you get tired of doing that. But what I was about to say, sometimes what happens is, even if you get to these conversations, you're having to legitimize to your partner why your feelings matter. And it's only until they actually, after 30 minutes, an hour, multiple hours, days of you talking about this and you expending all this emotional energy, you have to wait until they finally get this aha moment, be like, okay, all right, fine. I get it. I understand. So now you can exhale. But look at all the distress that you put yourself through fighting with this person just to be seen and heard and validated, right? Unless it makes sense to them, why you need that and why it's important, they're not going to give you any grace around it. And they're also not going to listen to you. This is where we get into the moments that I was going to share at the beginning of today's episode, where women will come onto the internet more often than not and share these experiences around times that they felt humiliated by partner and expect to have the validation that they're not getting from their partners. They know something is off. They're not going to get it from them. So they just need to hear from hopefully a chorus of people that they're okay. Okay. And that they have a right to feel this way. But they're not asking, again, they're not asking for advice on whether or not to leave. They're just asking for someone to just say, you can feel this way, because they feel so alone and so tired of having to fight through this all the time, right? They just need some relief that way. If you give me some relief this way, I can go back and keep going, because my partner's not giving it to me, but I need to get some support. And I think that's actually really good. Because in these types of relationships, you feel so alone, like you're drowning in this relationship that's 24/7, kept you on the clock mentally, financially, emotionally, spiritually, sometimes sexually. You know, so much of our sexual drive is connected to our emotions as women. Like whether or not we get wet, whether or not we're interested, whether or not we enjoy it, is all connected to how emotionally safe and seen we feel in a relationship. So some of us don't think we have a sex drive. But it's because we're actually in a relationship and our body is shutting down. Our body is telling us that something is off, right? Some of us have pelvic pain. We've talked about this. I think that episode was several years ago where I talked about having pelvic pain. And it turned out that it was mental and emotional based, not only because of fibroids and the surgery that I had and some of the things that happened due to the complications of the fibroids, but also the relationship that I was in. My body was like saying, no, we don't want to be connected to this person. And it was shutting down. Once I exited that relationship, that problem went away. Once I exited that relationship and started to heal, everything came back, y'all. So our emotional health is so important and so connected to our nervous system. But again, going back to what is familiar to us, if you lived your whole majority of your life learning how to repress or suppress, I always forget the right way to use the context for those words, but to deny your emotional needs or to put them off and to not be connected to that and to constantly be in go mode. Or there are so many, what it feels like is that there are so many crises and fires right now. And I'm not saying that my emotions are not important. I know that I'm important. I know loving myself is important. I know all this is important, but I have to take care of da-da-da-da-da. So I just need to get through this right here. And I'm going to do the self-love work at the same time, but I really have to focus on this too. Not understanding that by you focusing on your self-love, it helps everything else be better as well. Okay. So humiliation, embarrassment happens. Sometimes it's in front of other people where they may say some off-kilter things about you. Again, not ever calling out your name, not anything super, super aggressive. And I think that's where a lot of people, the hundreds and thousands to millions of women who I know are going through this, the reason why a lot of us stay is because we compare ourselves. When people say emotional abuse, and when they say we're in an abusive relationship or a neglectful relationship, we have very clear markers of people who are in domestically violent relationships. People where women are getting choked, they are getting slapped, they are getting kicked out, they are getting punched. And if that is not the case in your household, if you feel physically safe with your partner, if anything, you're like, my partner should be physically afraid of me, right? Because you're the boss, right? You do a lot of things in a relationship and in the household. So when people use words like that, you're like, man, you almost had me, but that doesn't really apply to my relationship. So you keep scrolling, you click out, you close the window, right? But a lot of the markers that happen in those type of relationships happen here. And so we have to be honest with ourselves about that.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
So with that said, the next stage that happens in these type of relationships of why we stay. So we're stressed and burnt out. We feel embarrassed and humiliated, right? Either by ourselves or when we tell other people, when other people see what they do or what they don't do for us. The next step is an overfocus on self-improvement. Oh, by the way, a lot of the things that happen when we are being humiliated and embarrassed, we don't even tell other people about when they happen because we know that it's off. right? Like, even if we want to confide in other people, we're not, because we feel like it makes us look and feel bad. There are things that happened in my previous relationship that I would love to share on the podcast or share publicly, because I know it would help illuminate what so many women have gone through and for you to know that you're not alone, but I will not. And I can give a clear disclaimer and say I won't now, maybe I will in the future, but I can say right now that I will not, because there's a shift from, oh, that's good information, to people like feeling pity. Like there's a mix between when people hear stories of what you've experienced when you have been embarrassed, humiliated, neglected in certain ways by your partner. On one hand, there's some pity with it. But then on the other hand, and there's righteous anger. And then there's judgment for you for staying. There's judgment for you not only for staying, but for accepting that treatment. You know, and some of the comments of some of these more viral videos, you'll see other women. And it's getting more and more common, which makes me really sad. And I think that's also what prompted me to use this week's episode. I had another topic planned because I saw a whole lot of women that were saying things like, he was like this when he got there, you know, she deserves it. No pity for her. You know, she's staying, so no pity for her. And I get where that comes from. I truly do get where it comes from. But as women, people who have been groomed through emotional neglect and have been told that this is our lot in life, and we honestly don't see any other way out, which again, I'm going to give y'all some more stages after this. So this is not where we end. That is so unfair. And it really is blaming the victim of someone who's being emotionally, mentally abusive to the person on the receiving end. They are victims. They are absolutely victims of people who will emotionally deplete, dry out, and kill, in many cases, the woman on the other side. And so I don't know if this energy is coming from tough love stuff or just people who just can't relate. But I know that any person who's been on the receiving end of this type of treatment, of any type of narcissistic abuse, gets it and wouldn't ever say this to a person. So here's the next stage of what happens after you go through all of this. The next stage that happens is an overfocus on self-improvement. This might be where some of you are right now, who may have clicked on this episode if you were searching for it. An overfocus on self-improvement. This is where you really start to look at, okay, what's my part in this? Can I be communicating to my partner in a different way? Can I learn how to take care of myself when my partner has hurt my feelings in a way that's not so dependent on him? Can I learn how to prioritize my own self-care, my own self-development, right? Especially right now in this wave of people talking more about being in married single mother relationships, or more and more people are coming out with these embarrassing stories. And then we have all these relationship gurus and influencers stitching the video or sharing the video and giving a tip about why you don't need to deserve this, right? That kind of stuff, right? They will really focus on this, looking for their part, focusing on whether or not they can advocate for their boundaries in a stronger way. There may also be a focus on couple communication support. So now we're going to couples therapy. Now we're really trying to work on this. Again, you're the one that's researching, looking for the couples therapist. You're the one that's spending hours and hours of time on YouTube, on Amazon, on Google, on TikTok, looking for resources and stories and voices that validate your own. You're looking for resources and stories and voices and tools and therapists and coaches to invest in your emotional health, to make your relationship better. Your partner's not doing this. You're the one who's doing it. At most, maybe they are going to therapy with you as a couple, and maybe they have their own individual therapist, but any other outside efforts and everything that are happening, that's not happening right now. The reason why this stage is so important for so many of us is because we are in a relationship that we cannot control. This might not be a conscious thought of yours, but it is a direct pipeline. If I can't control this person and what they say and what they do, what can I control? I can't control myself. So let me try to find a way to make myself happy, to learn how to cope with what's going on, and, you know, try to have a little bit more empowerment in this relationship where I feel a lack of power. And this is so good because you do need to be pouring into yourself. You have always deserved the love, the care, the attention, the help, the relief, the peace, the rest. That has always been something you not only have deserved, but you should have been getting to this time. So you taking the steps that you need to reclaim that for yourself, to restore yourself, is incredible. I have always said that when it comes to any of the qualities of love addiction or love avoidance, including codependency, that people experience, I've always said that they are not all inherently bad. They all have concepts and characteristics of what makes someone an amazing partner. The concepts of codependency that make people an amazing partner is the generosity experience, the empathy, the thoughtfulness, the giving nature, the generosity, the ability to compromise. All of those are things that you need in a healthy relationship. Those are things that you should never try to heal yourself out of, because then you just become this hard block of human flesh, right? The beauty of loving and connecting is to be in community, is to be soft, is to be able to build something new together as one unit. Yes, you have your own individuality, but also what you get to create as a couple is glorious, right? So you want to have those things. You want to have all those things be cherished, but we may tend to do them in the extreme and overcompensate. So this stage is really good because it's about you learning how to try to pull back, right? One of the qualities of this stage that you need to look out for is something just to note is that a lot of times there's denial still, especially if you're doing couples therapy and support. There's a lot of denial about the partner's place in this because you're so focused. That's why the name of the stage is over-focusing on you, because you're so focused on trying to make yourself happy. There's still the denial that the partner and their intentions and their energy with you is problematic, because look at how we started. We started the relationship that felt so easy and so comfortable and so familiar and so much like home in a way, right? Because it literally was home. So you've already locked in the idea that this partner is inherently good. They're just flawed a little bit, or this relationship has a lot of goodness in it. We just need to figure out how to make his differences and my differences work. We just have to find a way to make how we both show up in this life, to make it come out and make us meet in the middle, right? That's what this is. Not really the possibility that I partnered or I married someone who is going to drain me, and that this is not going to get better, and that there are real consequences if this doesn't get better. Okay. Now let's talk about the next stage. The next stage of what happens in these relationships. So this is a twofer. This is where there are two different options. It's the same stage level. So let's see. I did stage one, two, three, four, five. Now we're at stage six. So there's a 6A and there's a 6B. Okay. So there's an umbrella for either one. So 6A for some people is resignation. This is just how it is. You have been stressed and burnt out. You've been humiliated. You focus on yourself and your improvement and your boundaries and, you know, focus on trying to have couple communication and everything else. Nothing is happening. Nothing is really moving. You're still tired and you're still going to stay because you just resigned that this is just how the relationship is. And I need to do the best that I can for what I need, knowing that this is just how my partner is. You kind of just, this is my lot in life, is almost what you have taken it as. You know, at this point that this is not how it has to be, but this is how it is. But you add, this is how it is for you, which again insinuates that you don't really have any choice. And this is where you have to stay. You might pass it off as, you know, I'm staying for the kids, or I have to stay until there's the right time. I'm not financially able to do this by myself. I'm too old to do this. I'm too big to do this. I'm too skinny to do this. I have too much, insert whatever in my history to do this. So, you know, I'm just going to stay and I'll just kind of resign to it is what it is. And that is a very depressing, demoralizing place to be. At this stage, you are probably also still trying to do a lot of things for yourself and carve out time and carve out moments for yourself in the midst of this relationship or in this environment that is really weighing over you heavily. So you're not completely giving up in that way, but still, it's like there's a gray shadow. There's a gray cloud that's hanging over you. Okay. So that's 6A. 6B is after you have overfocused on self-improvement and everything else and focus on a coupleship, something shifts in your self-improvement cycle. So where you start to tap into deep, true self-love work. So the original stage five about looking at self-improvement, a lot of that self-improvement work is looking at where you are in relation to the environment and where you are in relationship in relation to the relationship. So it's real self-improvement work, But you're looking at, how do I manage fights? How do I measure, manage my emotional regulation so that I am better and not as triggered when I'm in partnership with this person? The true real self-love work is where you start to dig into, no, honestly, what do I need for me to have joy? And you do that. You do it unapologetically. You might do it with some shame and some guilt at first. You might do it with some fear. You might do it with some anxiety, but you're doing it. So if you're someone who has kids with this person, you start to leave this person with the kids so that you can have time by yourself. You stop cleaning up after people when it's 9 o'clock at night and you need to sleep because mommy needs to sleep, because wifey girlfriend needs to sleep. You stop laying out their clothes in the morning because that's one more task that you have had on your head and you just can't do it anymore. You stop figuring out what's for dinner because that's not your job. You're not a maid. You're not a domestic servant. You are not the hired help. You are not the chef on call. You are another grown adult in the household or in the relationship. And that is especially for someone who's not grateful. Because remember, all this stuff at the beginning, the relief, commitment, the entry into the relationship, you have been happy to help out, right? You've been happy to cook, to provide, to decorate. You've been happy to help them plan out their business. You've been happy to invest financially. You've been happy to sit with their mama when they're sick. You've been happy to do all these things. But now that you're starting to click that, I don't like how it feels when I do these things and there's no gratitude on the other side of it, you start to opt out, right? You start doing things for yourself that are not on the budget and you figure it out and you do all that. And so at this stage, right, we're still both in the relationship. Both 6A and 6B, you're still in a relationship. You still stayed. But 6B actually graduates to level 7. 6A can get to level 7 too, but she may need to wrap back around. So level 7 is clarity. You may have thought you had clarity before, but there's something that actually clicks at this stage. At this stage, it clicks that this is never going to get better. So the same thing that the person in 6A has, the resignation stage, that this is just the person that it is that I'm with. And it's level 7, something clicks like, this is the person that I'm with. And here are the real consequences of what will happen as I continue to stay in this relationship. If I stay in this relationship, I will get more depressed. I will get more physically ill and sick. I may potentially die early. A very big secret that many of us have is that we have had female relatives who would still be here on this earth if their male partners helped them. They are no longer living because they had a male partner who either passively or directly contributed to their early death through stress, through sickness, through not getting them the medical help and support that they needed. Because when you're with a partner that has weaponized incompetence or acts as if they can consider you, or you have to remind them 5 times to do something for you, or is a big fight, that just is consistently hapless. What happens when you're not there to do it all? What happens when you're not able to advocate for yourself at the doctor's office? What happens when the thing that's making you sick is your household? And so at this clarity stage, you understand, I don't want either options. I don't want to stay in a relationship that's going to be like this long term, but I also don't want to leave. I don't want to leave this place that feels comfortable. I don't want to leave this relationship. It's going to be so hard for me to even try to contemplate doing this on my own. I can't do this, but I know I can't do this anymore. So this is where you choose. This is where you choose to either go back to 6A and live in resignation and like this is just your lot of lines, or you move to step 8, which is where you exit and you find out that you are stronger than you thought you were. You found out that you can do this. A lot of times when I hear other people talk about, especially if they happen to be married single mothers and they're in a relationship that's either a dual income household, or their partner is the main financial contributor, or in many cases, the female is the main financial contributor, but you have used his income to help build your household, right? You look at the numbers, you look at that, you're like, there's no way I can make this work. And I can tell you, that you can. So many of y'all are actually the reason why your household is going by your money management and the ways that you organize and structure the household. You can do it on your own. And not only will you be able to do it on your own, you might actually become more financially successful and solvent without having the mental stress and emotional stress that is keeping you down this whole time. But you exit Now, the part of exiting is not just the physical. And exiting doesn't have to be physically leaving as well. Some people exit mentally in their mind, but they're wise enough and smart enough to kind of get their money up while they are making their plans to leave. So they've mentally checked out, they've emotionally checked out, but they're just saving because it's time to go. Some people think they're at that stage. Some people think they're at that stage, they've mentally checked out, but really they're still there in the resignation stage. They're just kind of depressed because they're still waiting for the right time. The person who is at the clarity and exit place, they have a timeline. They're like, this is the amount of money that I need, and then I'm out. This is where I'm going. This is the amount of time, and then I'm gone, right? Other people may have an amount in their mind, but it's also kind of flexible and fluid because to be in this environment, this house is still comfortable, right? You know it. You're not paying this person any mind. So you say, but they're still getting under your skin. They're still triggering you. They're still upsetting you. You really underestimate the impact of living in a household with someone who's your op, with someone who is your enemy. And again, so many of us grew up in households where this was naturally happenstance. So you may hear that and you might either not believe that this person is actually your op, or you might know that this is your op, but you don't see it as a big shining red, you know, clown level circus of flags that is, right? Because you've lived with ops your whole life. So you don't get how detrimental it is. But once you actually exit and leave, that's when you really get to do stage number 9 is the deep self-forgiveness and deep trauma work. And so all the self-love work that you were doing before gets to take root, truly. You get to practice some self-forgiveness for what you took and what you accepted over this time, because you start to blame yourself. This goes back to the over-focus on your self-improvement work. You start to look at yourself and blame yourself for being there for so long, as if this person did not intentionally deceive you and drain you when they did not care enough about you to take care of you. It's their issue. It's their fault, not yours, love. And you could only do what you knew to do, which is what was taught to you, given to you, modeled to you. But now you know. You didn't know what you didn't know back then. Okay? So again, these are the stages. For those of us who may stay in relationships, you will only feel tired. If you got to this place, I hope that it has helped illuminate what it is that you need. So that is it, y'all. I really appreciate you being here. And I hope that you found this episode helpful. And I hope that you remember that you are worthy of all the love that you deserve, even if it's not been your norm, even if you think you don't need it. I promise you that you are deserving of love that makes your heart glow, not just that feels comfortable, not just that feels familiar, but makes you glow from the inside. It feels easy and restful and surprises you with how joyful it can be. That's it for now. I'll see you in the next episode.
Started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.